Hey everybody, welcome to Utah, the Utah state, home of Zion, home of the Great Salt Lake, home of the Utah Jazz, some believe the home of many a Mormon, but yeah, also home to some really good food, as we're going to check out coming up in the episode with buddy of the pod, Andrew. Obviously, go and check out when I've been on his show and when, you know, others have been on to share their stories of grief and loss, but how food is connected and also how that food always brings back great memories of those that maybe we've lost touch with or those who have maybe passed. It is great. I've always said that show, it is humanity in the headphones. It's really great to listen to. It's very calming. But also it's got, you know, some fun things. It's life, right? But go to ourlastmeal.com if you want to share your story, or if you want to just check out some great episodes, check them out wherever podcasts are. It could be Pocket Casts, it could be Spotify, Apple, Google, anywhere you go for a podcast, look for Our Last Meal. Also look for us, Culinary Convo. You can go to culinaryconvo.com. You can sign up for our newsletter to get recipes from episodes like this one, as well as you can check out our sponsor, Anchor, and maybe start your own podcast. Who knows? But the main thing would be is that we're going to let our sponsor have a little message here, and then we'll get to Utah, United Foods of America. We'll be back. Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. We are here at United Foods of America, and we're on the pod with Our Last Meal host, Andrew. How's it going, Andrew?
Evan, how are you doing? It is always a pleasure to hop on.
I know. It's a pleasure to have you. I tell you what, United Foods of America, we're in Utah. Yeah. Utah. I tell you what, beautiful state. We've got crazy nature. It has a lake that is turning into like a poisonous gas bomb, apparently.
Okay. So yeah. Indicative of the rest of the world.
Right. Right. But very common. It's salty, from my understanding.
Salty lake. They should name a city after that or something. They should. I feel like it'd be a nice, you know, people would remember that.
Right. Tourist destination galore. If you had this, like, I don't know, a Great Salt Lake. Like, if you had something like that, I think too many people would want to go, to be honest.
But you need a catchy name, you know, so you do. People know about the city.
Yeah.
Because if you just like named it after the Salt Lake and then just like threw like town on, like if you called it Salt Lake Town, that'd be dumb.
That wouldn't work for anyone involved.
No.
If anything, more people would be like, oh, I bet it's like Iceland, Greenland. I bet they have just a huge freshwater lake. It's not even salty.
Yeah. It's not even a lake. It's a pond.
Right. It's a pond in the backyard of whoever the mayor is. Like, okay, we get it, you know. But yeah, that's, you know, Utah, I know it for Zion. I know it for Bryce Canyon, I believe. There's a couple different ones. There's Arches. There's all these national parks there. There is Park City, Utah, which is like rich people, capital of the world. Tons of skiing in Park City, Utah.
Yeah.
It's a nice little chalet town, I believe is what they call it, chalet town.
I feel like the harder the types of houses are pronounced, the fancier the town is.
Yeah.
So that one's got to be nice.
That's got to be pretty nice, yeah. I know that when I was driving across the U.S., I stopped in Park City, and the hotel that I went to, I kid you not, I didn't know where the hotel was. Drove around forever trying to follow GPS. It kept taking me to this mailbox. And I'm like, that's a house. That's not a hotel. Why is there this mailbox? And I just kept going, right? Well, then nightfall comes around. I go up to it And what do you know? The mailbox was a buzzer. And you hit the buzzer, and literally the parking garage went into the side of, like, this huge mountain cliff kind of thing. And the hotel was actually behind the house, like, on a hillside, which is why I couldn't see the hotel. That's fancy. That is fancy.
That's insanely fancy.
Yeah. When we went into the room, there were skis, like, in a cross, right? Like an X. Right. Above the bed, there was fancy hotel. And so can you guess what happened after we went in that fancy hotel?
I would be afraid I would break anything and everything.
Oh, man, you hit the nail on the head. I stopped up their toilet. Can you believe that? I did that. Yeah. Fancy hotel. I'm there for one night in Park City, and I bet that hotel had bills like crazy afterwards. I don't even know how I did it. I thought this is a normal visit to the bathroom. It was not, Andrew. It was a crazy visit. So Utah, whenever I remember it, I remember they put hotels in the side of mountains, and they're piping whatever the thing is. They need to work on it. They got to work on it.
I feel like this is kind of a condemnation of the food of Utah that, you know, this is what happened.
So I only got to order Domino's because it was the only thing open after I got lost looking for this hotel. It was nightfall. It was past like 9 o'clock. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And there's a little town in Park City. Kind of reminds you like German towns, right? You walk around, there's cobble streets and stuff. And I would go to these pubs and bars that were open, but their kitchens were closed. They're like, oh, yeah, our kitchen closes at 8. It's not ski season, so we close at 8.
Yeah, so we're not probably not a lot of business.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I can't drink eat. Like, that's not something I can do.
I'm surprised even at bars and pubs though, because I mean this is ignorance on my part. I thought Utah was more on the dry side,
right? So near the Salt Lake area, it's very foresty and very hilly, mountainy. Think like Colorado Rockies type.
Gotcha.
You know that vibe. But yeah, it's like one of those things where, yeah. I thought, well, this hotel on this phone looks absolutely amazing, and I'm not seeing it. And I bet that hotel now wishes, like, we wish you wouldn't have seen it.
I would have just taken that as a sign. I'm too poor to go here. I am so poor that I cannot see this place.
So because the ski season was so bad, the hotel rates were amazing. It was like 70 bucks a night. I was like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So you got to stop up a fancy bathroom, and it only cost you $70. That's not a bad deal.
That's not a bad deal.
And you got to eat some Domino's. I'd take that deal.
Yeah. And it was regular thick crust, so it had the garlic spread on the crusts.
Nice.
It was good. It was good. Didn't get to try really any traditional Utah eats, but yeah, it was. What a heck of a trip.
See, and I'll say this. I was going to say, you talk about your traditional Utah eats. I am excited to learn about these today because, for me, honestly, my when I think of Utah food, I'm thinking probably the most inoffensive, bland. And to Utah listeners, I'm sorry, but I just imagine everyone in Utah likes tepid water and white bread. That's just, in my mind, that's what they go for.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, I think, was it Polynesian, right? Hawaiian Polynesian. Big community of that in Utah. Near Salt Lake City and those areas. But otherwise, a white Mormon family. That's kind of what I think over and over and over again. Like replicate, kind of like on Sims when you can copy stuff. You just do that over and over and over again. But, people move there.
Well, so I would not have expected the Polynesian community or the Hawaiian community. That is intriguing, though, because I love, and we've talked about this before in other episodes I've been on, this idea of these fusions of cultures and foods.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what we have here, because I feel like there's going to be some good stuff coming up there.
Yeah. Well, before we hit the food, and stopped up toilets. We got to figure out Salt Lake City, Utah. You know, they're known for some things here. The first thing being from KSLNewsRadio.com. These are Utah trivia fun facts. And boy, howdy, are they fun. Salt Lake City, Utah has more plastic surgeons per capita than any other city in the United States.
Okay, so wow. More plastic surgeons per capita. On average, are the people more attractive?
That's the million-dollar question, the multiple surgery question. are you guys actually, you know, are all of you just drop dead gorgeous, or did a lot of you maybe get a bad surgeon? You know what I mean? So,
like, you know what it makes me think of, this is just how my brain works. I think of the riddle when I was a kid of, you move to a town with two barbers. One has a really nice haircut and one has a really bad haircut. Which one do you go to?
Right.
If you move to a town with two plastic surgeons and one of them is really ugly and the other one's really attractive, which one do you go to?
Which one do you go to?
It doesn't apply. It has nothing, right. No bearing on the right. situation. But
no bearing on it. Yeah, whatsoever.
That's where my head went.
Yeah, yeah. I just imagine, like, you walk into an office and, like, the guy's nose is facing east. and you're just like, ooh, like, who? What, you're not the doctor. Oh, you're the doctor. Like, oh, no. God. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, man. So, yeah. But, no, the only thing I can come up with on the most plastic surgeons per capita, keeping up with the Joneses, man. You get old. You get old. Stuff sags. Like, stuff sags. And it gets wrinkly, you know, all sorts of.
Man.
Yeah. It's age. Shows age.
That's, I invested in some eye cream this morning. You know, we went to Target and had to went and grab some because I'm 35 now. I need to start keeping a little bit tighter.
Yep. I have to start moisturizing. I had to start moisturizing my face, which, by the way, with a beard, moisturizing your face, talk about pain. I get moisturizer in the beard, my mustache. It's like, I like it. It makes me look good. But, like, at the same time, I think the wrinkles and stuff like that, I think it warns others, like, hey, don't think that I'm going to do a 50-yard dash, okay? Like, I'm here for the food and the fun, but not for the festival. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be breaking out a dance like Six Flags old dude, you know, dun, 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 like, that ain't going to happen. I'm here for the food. Like, that's what gray hair, wrinkles, it warns others, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get handsy and pushy with grandpa, because if he falls, his hip's done for. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. That's game over.
Yeah. Game over. But yeah, also, Utah is the only state to have a cooking pot among its state symbols. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Pretty legit.
So do you know, like, from doing the research, do you know, like, why that's such an important part of it?
Yeah, it is because the cooking pot was one of the main utensils used for a bunch of folks going out towards the New Mexico and the Oregon Trail. Yeah.
That is honestly really cool, just because, I mean, it's and I think you and I both have an appreciation of food and the importance it plays both in society and individuals. I mean, so to see, you know, some kind of representation of that on the flag, that's I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah,
Utah.
Way to go, Utah. I tell you, they did it. The Dutch oven was approved as a state symbol by the legislature in 1997. And I think another thing it mentioned was family. Like, when you have a Dutch oven, you're cooking for others and family. And
cool.
they would cook for the wagon trains and different stuff like that. So, yeah, way to go, Utah. Way to go.
I'll give you that one.
Yeah, good old Dutch oven. Making breads and soups. Oh, yeah.
No, I did a camping trip a couple years ago with some friends, and we did a blueberry cobbler in the Dutch oven. Absolutely
dang
wild.
Good.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Dang good. Whenever they do, like, the middle picture here, they've got, like, the coals where they put, you know, the charcoal coals on top of the lid. One, legit move. But two, makes anything coming out of that thing a million times better. Like, can't get enough of it. Yeah. But yeah, Utah has one of the highest rates of prescription drug abuse in the U.S. Over the past decade, it has increased by 800%.
Wow.
Oopsie doodle.
I typically try to come in with a zinger. I don't have one for this one. It's it's sad. It is because you know, I know prescription drugs, especially this is a great podcast guest moment. I'm so sorry, but I know prescription drug, you know, my hometown, similar thing in North Carolina, you know, there's been a lot of drug abuse the last decade or so, and it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things where prescription drug abuse, it kind of hits those who are the most vulnerable, because most of the time you get it prescribed, right? Yeah. So it's like you're having to take this for whatever reason. It could be an injury, could be an accident you got into, whatever it may be, and then it just spirals, just goes out of hand. And it's one of those things where I think with most states, like you mentioned, North Carolina, West Virginia, that's like a big one too. Tennessee, Missouri, where I'm from, Oregon, I know it's a big deal out here as well. It's one of those things where, like, we have these states and everything's wonderful and beautiful and there's all these great things, but then there's like the, oh yeah, do you live here? That reality. And I chuckle because it's like, sometimes it's like, yeah, we're giving all this grant money to reconstruct the visitor center somewhere. And it's like, yeah, what about the people that like live here? Like, you know, we're doing stuff for tourists and I get it. Like, you have to do some of that stuff. But like, you know, we got like a problem growing here, you know, like
we need to help these communities.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's rough. But that's why we try to look at their food, because, you know, it's just a better subject to not get down about. Really, to be honest.
Very true.
But yeah, the last fact here, because of the state of Utah's high elevation and desert-like climate, its snow is dry and powdery. Hence, Utah claims to have the greatest snow on Earth.
I know, you know, that kind of snow that they're talking about too, that kind of powdery, fluffy.
Yeah.
That's the good stuff.
That's the good stuff. That's snow cone weather right there.
Yeah.
It is good. And I had a cool picture of a guy skiing and it like had the snow, but I think it was a PNG instead of a JPEG. And so now I got this guy here. Do you know who this guy is?
I really hope his name is like Jonathan Snow or William Snow.
It's better than Jonathan Snow.
Who we got?
We got Butch Cassidy. He is a famous person from Utah. Yeah. Born in 1866, you probably know him as Butch Cassidy. He's undoubtedly one of the biggest celebrities in Utah. A bank robber, train robber, and overall outlaw, he was supposedly killed in a shootout in Bolivia in 1908. Some conspiracy theorists believe he escaped and returned to the United States to live out the rest of his life in hiding. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, inspiration for countless movies,
totally.
And totally. Stories. Did not know he's from Utah. Are you Utahan?
Yeah.
Utahoan?
Yeah. Utahan?
Utahan. We're going to go to Utahan.
Yeah, fellow Utahan. Good old Butch Cassidy. But yeah, it's kind of interesting to know that it's like, it was the Wild West at one point in Utah, you know? They were having that, and he got to enjoy the great snow. You know, you got to have a fun time in the snow, and then he went to Bolivia and started a shootout.
it is crazy to think about some little boy like having like just like playing this, and like, this is fun.
Yeah,
I'm gonna rob trains one day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Man, I wish I could build a ski resort here, but I think I'm gonna have to rob a couple banks to make this happen. And then
he's in
Bolivia, and he's like, man, I wish I was on that Utah snow.
He was in Bolivia. Somebody said that the best snow in the world wasn't from Utah, and he's like, oh no, you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And then that was it. Yeah, fight ensued, and we know it. Man. But other than Butch Cassidy, another famous thing, and finally we've hit the food from tasteatlas.com. You got the Farnell. The Farnell is an American cocktail, and right now it's showing apple cider. So now I'm getting kind of worried. Like, what happened to my images, folks? But anyways, the Farnell, it's a cocktail. It's a yellow cocktail. It's made with a combination of Jack Daniel's whiskey and lemonade. Heck, ooh, yeah.
That in sounds order refreshing.
To prepare it. Yeah, it does. The ingredients are stirred in a Collins glass filled with ice, and then the cocktail is then garnished with lime and fresh mint. It is believed that Farnell was invented at the Jeremy Ranch Golf Club in Park City, Utah. Nowadays, the drink is especially popular during summer, but it is also enjoyed in many winter resorts as an apres-ski drink. I don't know what that means. This is too fancy for me. Park City, Utah. Too fancy. Apres-ski? I don't know what that is. Yeah, no idea. I've heard of Aperol Spritz. I don't know.
Yeah. This sounds like I'm a lover of whiskey, so this yeah. And lemonade too, but you know, mainly the whiskey. This yeah. sounds amazing. It sounds like this would be really refreshing. I could see this being a great summer drink.
Yeah, yeah. Keep you warm in that perfect snow out in yeah. Utah. Yeah. And then the one image I got here, apple beer. That's right. Apple beer is a non-alcoholic American version of German Fassbrause drink. It was first produced in America in 1960 from the original Fassbrause recipe of Scholven and Company. Today, it is produced and distributed by the Apple Beer Corporation in Salt Lake City. Apple beer can primarily be found in the western and mountain regions of the United States and the Caribbean. It is light in color with a rich, fruity flavor similar to sparkling apple cider. Ingredients include purified carbonated water, cane sugar, citric acid, natural flavors, and vitamin C, which sounds like something you'd read off the back of like a regular soda can, but this is apple beer.
I'm just gonna say,
apple cider. It's apple yeah. beer.
I call shenanigans. You're going to call it beer, but it's non-alcoholic? I call shenanigans.
I know. Well, root beer, right?
Yeah, well, but you can get hard root beer, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. You can get hard root beer. So you can get hard apple beer, and it's just called cider.
Yeah, well, you know, fair enough. It sounds tasty.
Yeah, it sounds really good, but guys, add some alcohol to it. That's all I'm going to say. Makes yeah. makes a cheerful man cheery. You know, that's what I've heard. But the next one here, you know, if you hate your coronary arteries, get you a pastrami burger. That's right.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. The pastrami burger consists of a toasted sesame bun filled with a beef patty that is topped with pastrami, cheese, tomatoes, shredded lettuce, onions, and fry sauce. A combination of ketchup, mayonnaise, sweet relish, and onion powder. It's an invention of a Greek man named James Katsanevas, who had a restaurant called Minos Burgers in Anaheim, California, and started serving the dish in the early 1970s. While pastrami was brought over to Los Angeles by the Jewish people who came over from New York City in the middle of the 20th century, later on in the 80s, Katsavenis moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and brought his famous pastrami burger with him. There, he opened a new restaurant called Crown Burgers, where some of the best pastrami burgers are still served. Yeah.
I'm just going to say it, that looks and sounds amazing.
Yeah. Whoever James, you know, his demeanor, I don't know his, you know, his politics, his religion, I don't know his, you know, any of that stuff. But culinarily wise, it sounds like James was a maximalist.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I'm going to grab the best parts of beef and I'm going to put them together. And then they're like, well, what about cheese? That's an amazing. He's like, I already got it covered.
I'm just like, gonna say it. I I don't know his politics. I mean, but I can't speak on those. But I will support him on his food endeavors.
Yeah. Yeah. And the picture we got here, it's got the potato wedges. You know. Oh man.
Yeah. So you know what? Sometimes a potato wedge is really nice. I love French yeah. fries, but sometimes a wedge is just that's just what you want.
You get almost that inner center that's like mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah. Like, ugh. Nice and crispy yeah. on the outside and then soft and warm on the inside.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, man. I tell you. And you know if they gave you some jus, right? Some au jus.
Out of this world.
Dipping that thing. Yeah. And then, you know, the Mormons were like, we can't have everything. So then they made Amish chicken. Amish chicken. It's a traditional American poultry dish. It is made with a combination of chicken, flour, garlic powder, heavy cream, paprika, water, salt, and pepper. The chicken is dredged in flour and seasonings, and it is then covered with a combination of cream and water. The concoction is baked until the skin becomes crispy and golden brown. It is recommended to serve Amish chicken with mashed potatoes and a fresh salad on the side. Yeah. That looks dang good. Really good.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. Some Amish chicken, I got a feeling, would be a family home run. Easy to feed the kids, easy to feed yourself. On top of that, if you can make it extra crispy, like in a smoker.
Oh, Lord.
I tell you.
Yeah, I'm a fan of any kind of a smoke addition, or addition of smoke flavor. Everything about this sounds good.
Yeah.
There's something so perfect about it, like a simple chicken dish, too.
Yeah, yeah. Chicken noodle soup, right? It cures every tummy ache known to man. Amish chicken. It probably would cure any of your technological woes. It'd be like, you take it, and it's like, yeah, no, technology's not a problem. You don't even think about it. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
I mean, yeah, I don't blame anyone for not wanting a cell phone if this is what kind of food you're eating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what are you doing with your phone while you're eating this thing? Yeah. It's too good. Next one here, frog eye salad. This has consisted of the slaughtering of, like, I think it's upwards of 20,000 frogs. I'm kidding, everybody. We're not slaughtering frogs. It's just a quirky name. Frog eye salad or frog's eye salad or just frog dash eye salad. Frog eye salad is a flavorful concoction made with ball-shaped acini de pepe pasta, egg yolks, and a whipped cream topping that can sometimes be enriched with the addition of pineapple pieces, shredded coconut, mandarin oranges, or marshmallows. This crossover between a pasta salad and a fruit salad is especially popular in Utah, where it is a staple at potlucks. It's kind of a take on ambrosia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Waldorf salad, I think, is another one, you know. They got all sorts of stuff like that. And the pasta, what it does, it adds actually like a holding mechanism, like a joiner, right? Like it kind of puts the pineapple, the marshmallow, like everything together. It keeps it held together with the whipped cream and everything. The shredded coconut adds a lightness to where you forget that you're in Utah. I think that's the thing. The coconut's like, am I in the Bahamas? And shortly thereafter, somebody's like, no, you're in Utah. You're in Utah.
Still in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, still in Salt Lake City. It's a poisonous air bomb right now, but it's okay. It'll be fine.
The pasta piece, like that one kind of threw me off. I mean, but I don't know. This is something. If I had a bowl of this, if I was offered a bowl of this, I could very much see me thinking it's an odd combination, but being all in on giving this a try. Because there's so many flavors here that I like. I mean, this sounds like a winner. I think the marshmallows, I could probably do without those just because of all the fake sweetness. I feel like you'd get enough from the fruit and the coconut.
Yeah.
But right. I would totally be down to try this.
Oh, totally. And this seems like a dropped food for the dog home run. Like, if you didn't like it, you could drop it, and the dog's going to eat it. Like, it'll be fine. Is it going to be messy? Yeah, a little bit. You know. But
this is a banner day for that dog, though.
It is. Yeah, the dog's like, oh, my God, I got fruit in my diet, guys. Like, you wait until tonight. Oh, man. 3 a.m., that 3 a.m. morning poop is going to be great. Like, ugh.
Glorious. Yeah.
But as many people knew, going across the lands to New Mexico and to Oregon, a lot of dysentery. A lot of cholera, a lot of succumbing to the world and what it doesn't provide you. But luckily, we had folks that were left behind that provided for us, and they would give you tons of casserole dishes of funeral potatoes.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah.
I've heard of funeral potatoes before. One of my favorite comedians talked about this in a trip he took with his girlfriend, I think, to Utah. And he specifically mentioned this dish at a buffet restaurant, and the name is really sad, but they look amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and it says here the other names that they have: it's Mormon funeral potatoes, party potatoes, which is the exact opposite of funeral, and then church potatoes. So it sounds like whoever came up with this, they're like, we need this potato dish to fit all occasions.
So it really just sounds like they're just naming them based on wherever they're at.
Right. Right. Like, you know, eventually somebody's just going to call it Dale's potatoes.
Yeah.
We're at Dale's house. So it's Dale's potatoes.
Yeah. You know, patio potatoes, gas station potatoes.
Yep.
Really, wherever you could eat these potatoes, that's the name of the potatoes.
Yeah. Pool party potatoes. These are these. Pool party potatoes. We got, yeah, this is going to be great. Everybody's like, yeah, no, man, do you got any drinks? Like, you know, kind of like that lemonade whiskey thing? No. We got back porch near the grill potatoes. So
I do like the idea of them, like, getting, like, hyper-specific.
Yeah, yeah, getting real detailed. Yeah, yeah, bottom of the fridge, lower right corner, bottom shelf next to the ketchup potatoes.
Yeah, where are those at, though?
where's that at, though? Oh. I think it's out in the garage. They're out in the garage. Sorry about that. But it does say here, contrary to its name, funeral potatoes are the ultimate comfort food, a cheesy au gratin potato casserole that is synonymous with the state of Utah and the Church of Latter-day Saints, or LDS, also known as Mormons. It consists of cube potatoes, cheese, onions, cream soup or sauce, sour cream, and a topping of butter, cornflakes, or crushed potato chips.
Oh my God.
Crushed potato chips. Oh, man. The dish is commonly prepared by Mormons to comfort grieving family members after a loved one's funeral, so it is not just an ordinary dish, but also a sign of care, love, and compassion. Although funeral potatoes started as a dish intended for funerals, today it is a common side dish that can be served at any time. It is best accompanied by ham, pastry rolls, and salads with ranch.
In all fairness, Thousand Island.
Can't do that. It's got to be ranch.
Well, you know, in all fairness, I think most things are best accompanied by ham, pastry rolls, and salads with ranch. That's personal preference.
Right. Tacos. Oh, does it have ham or pastry rolls or ranch?
Yeah, no, I'd do that. Like, what'd you have for dinner? I had ham, pastry rolls, and salad with ranch. Oh, you know what would have been great with that? What's that? More ham, pastry rolls, and salads with ranch. Like that.
Yeah, a second serving of those exact things. Yeah. And you know, it works out. It all goes in the wash.
I am I am glad that they have the other names, because can you imagine, like, popping up at, like, a housewarming party? It's like, oh, my God, thank you for coming. We're really excited. You know, it's a big moment for us. Like, yeah. I know. We appreciate you having us. Also, here are some funeral potatoes, because I know it's a happy moment, but think about death.
Yeah.
I want you to really think about that while you eat these.
Really guilt yourself over eating this. You really need to be grateful for how you're living.
Yeah, we're just going to call these party potatoes and keep it moving.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, though, is it's either that you can make it an awkward situation, or you can make it like a diehard situation. You know, you show up with funeral potatoes and it's like, no, this is a housewarming. And then the first thing out of your mouth is you drop the casserole dish and you go, not anymore. And then you, like, you know, and that, I'm telling you, that I bet you someone has thought, you know, it would be the coolest intro to an action movie.
I want that intro now.
Yeah.
It also could just be, if I bring this dish and I call it funeral potatoes, nobody's going to touch them, and then I can take the leftovers home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, this is one of those dishes, like, I think the reason why it's a sign of care and love and all that stuff, these are the ingredients that, like, you got to freaking punch kids to make sure they don't eat this before you leave your house. Like, this is all stuff that everybody likes. And so to just make it and to bake it and then to have it ready to give to somebody else, I totally see it. I totally get it. Yeah, yeah. But I will say it does fit the thing that you mentioned, which was, you know, pale, you know, like basic. Because I don't see, like, and chipotle peppers. You don't see anything that's, like, gonna throw somebody off. It's like, no, we added more cream potatoes, mashed potatoes, then cube potatoes. Then we added cheese, butter, and then we put potato chips on top. We added salt, but no black pepper. No black pepper.
A little too spicy.
A little too spicy. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, are you sure it's gonna be moist enough? Oh, yeah, we added a lot of heavy cream. Don't worry about it. It's like, Okay.
You know, so here's what's surprising to me. This is a common dish in Utah, and yet they have flimsy plumbing. These two things don't add up.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It could have been a conspiracy. They could have been trying to run me out of town. I don't know. You know, flimsy plumbing and this, I know. I know. I don't understand it. I just know that if you call a front desk in Park City, Utah at 11:30 at night saying, hey, my toilet looks like it's about to explode, they don't like you when you do that.
Well, thing is, you never claim ownership. You know, hey, I don't know how this happened. This toilet's clogged.
I don't know how this happened.
We can spend time asking questions, or we can spend time getting resolution. Personally, right. I'd like to spend some time resolution.
Exactly. I want to solve this problem. Yeah. I think someone came in my room and did this.
Yeah. I have one last comment on funeral potatoes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm trying to, any funny thing that pops in my head, I've got to get out. But really, you know that there's somebody, at least a handful of people in the history of the state of Utah, who've heard like, oh, so-and-so passed away. It's like, oh, it's terrible. Yes. Yeah. It means I'm getting funeral potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. You know that's coming. Either that, or there's the like group community hatred for the one person that's like, hey, man, I'm cutting a square of funeral potatoes. You want to serve me? No, I don't like funeral potatoes. What? Like, everybody.
I love that person. Yeah. I love that person because it's one less person I have to fight with.
That's true. That's the way you should look at it, right? Is that there's less competition, more funeral potatoes for you, but then everybody wonders, like, is he one of us? Like,
okay, you know? I see it.
Yeah. Are you? If you're an alien conspiracy person, if you're anything, you're just looking over at that person like, you don't like funeral potatoes. No, I'm not a huge fan of potatoes in general.
Okay.
Really? French fries. Don't like French fries, huh? Is that what you're telling me? Potato chips? You don't like potato chips? Like, I could just imagine an Uncle Joe, Jerry, Jack, whatever, just going crazy on a rant on somebody who says they don't like funeral potatoes.
This is a problem with men nowadays. Yeah. They don't like potatoes.
Yeah. It's all these millennial snowflakes who can't figure out what they want in life, so then they don't like funeral potatoes. And everybody's like, listen, Uncle Jack, you gotta calm down. You're really exercising your blood pressure pills right now, okay? You need to calm down. I've got blood pressure pills because of funeral potatoes.
When this one takes me out, if this is the big one at my funeral, nothing but potatoes.
Yeah, all the potatoes, the whole thing, and you're not invited.
Oh, God. That is a power move, though. If you're one of your last wishes is to tell somebody you're not invited to my funeral.
Man.
That's you're not coming to my birthday party times infinity.
Totally. Eternity.
Yeah, it's eternity.
Yeah, it literally is just like, it's like, even though I'm dead and I have no control over the visitors list, I know you ain't coming. That's like, yeah,
you're not getting
the end. Yeah, like, oh man. Yeah, I tell you, people are just, you know, they're vicious, but at least we get funeral potatoes.
Yeah,
kind of the main thing. And if you wanted to dip your funeral potatoes in something, I think the perfect thing is fry sauce. That's right. Originating from Salt Lake City, Utah, fry sauce consists of a simple combination of equal parts ketchup and mayonnaise, or one part ketchup and two parts mayonnaise. The sauce has a thick, smooth consistency, is characterized by its pink color. Originally, it was invented in the 1950s by Don Carlos Edwards, a chef who first served it in his restaurant called Don Carlos's Barbecue in Salt Lake City. Today, fry sauce is typically used as a dip for French fries or as a condiment for burgers, and some people add extra ingredients to the sauce, such as garlic and various spices. And pretty much everybody says it's like burger sauce if you add other stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's like ketchup, mayo, it's fry sauce. The second you add relish, it's burger sauce. Like, it's a special burger sauce of some kind.
I'm on the fence on this one. I'm not a big fan of ketchup, or and especially not mayonnaise. And then when you tell me a one-part ketchup, two-part mayonnaise, I'm having some bad thoughts over here.
And see, and that's the thing is, like, the image here, it's just over the top of French fries. And so if you go to Utah and they're like, hey, Andrew, I hope you're liking your meal. You're like, yeah, about those French fries. He's like, oh, here they are. And then he slides them to you and you're like, is that fry sauce?
Just a just a bucket of fry sauce on it.
Yeah. You're just like, hey, where are the fries?
Yeah. No, I'm just like, yeah, that's great. Should have got the funeral potatoes.
But no, go ahead and try one. No, I'm good. I'll get to them in a minute. No.
Do you ever make your own dipping sauce for fries?
Oh, yeah. 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 Totally. Okay. For me, it is about spice. I want heat with my fry sauce. Because potatoes, like you mentioned, they're bland. You got to, you know, they're salt. So they take on the flavor of whatever. And so I'll add a little bit of mayo. One of my favorites is sour cream. If you do sour cream and then a hot sauce with it, one, it's cooling, right? So it's like cold in nature automatically. Then on top of that, you add like chives, some type of oniony based something. It's good. But then on top of that, you start adding like a chipotle powder where it's smoky, you know? It's smoky heat. Or you add some gochujang or gochugaru flakes. Those are really good. Aleppo pepper flakes. Those are really good. So anything that adds a flake, because then it's like a burst of heat, right? If you have the seeds of stuff, it's a burst of heat. But yeah, your powders, they add a consistent heat. You know, it's going to overlay the whole thing. But yeah, I will say ketchup is one of those. I don't add it as heavy because I think ketchup is like its own thing, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, sriracha. Oh my gosh. Include sriracha in pretty much anything. It becomes a million times better. So yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Now see, okay. If I'm doing it, I do like a little bit of ketchup as a base. But I like some plain yellow mustard, some hot sauce. And, there's a lot of fun you can have with the hot sauces. I've never tried it with sour cream though, but you've got me wanting to try that the next time we make fries.
Yeah.
You know, I like to keep the fry sauce a little simple.
Yeah, there's a tang. It adds a tang. And then with the heat, like I said, it's already cold. Like, you know automatically sour cream is going to be cold. So it's like cooling. It's kind of, oh, man, it's good.
Yeah. I'm going to try that this week, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Oh, man. And this has nothing to do with fry sauce, but every time I see it in a grocery store, I want to cry on my knees. So Ruffles, they make a... It's a buffalo hot wing chip, and it's got the ridges, the whole thing. It's wavy, you know, whatever. And it comes out like once a year, something like that. I think it's like towards football season, you know, fall type of whatever. And then there's a brand called Dean's. I think everybody has seen it before, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's Dean's like ranch dip or onion dip, you know, whatever. I would get either one of those, ranch or onion dip, and I would grab those hot wing chips and dip it in that. I could eat a whole family size jumbo bag of Ruffles Buffalo hot wing with that, like, Dean's dip. Somebody could have told me, like, Devin, if you eat that whole bag of chips, that is automatically like 1,800 calories. And then that whole tub of Dean's dip, you're adding another 1,500 calories. If you eat that whole thing, I'm like, no, this is dinner.
This is dinner. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
this is dinner. I've already had lunch and breakfast. This is dinner. They're like, Devin, that is way past your daily calorie amount. I'm like, no, this is dinner.
Yeah. This isn't an all-the-time thing. This is just a sometimes thing.
Right. This is a special occasion. They're like, Devin, your heart will explode. I'm like, somebody's going to have to fight me to get this bag out of my hands.
It's like, your heart will explode. Well, then make sure to bring funeral potatoes because I'm taking this thing down.
Yeah, I'm taking it down. And if you guys want fry sauce with it, I'll give you a couple chips. How about that? Yeah. I mean, I love that combination. So every time I see that bag of Buffalo hot wing chips, my wife immediately is like, Devin, no. No. And I'm just like, man. Like,
I just kicking the ground.
Yeah. Just
never let me have any fun.
And I just walk down every aisle so sad. And the thing is I think it's mainly the bag. If I see the Dean's dipping sauce, I'm kind of just like, oh, yeah, that's really good. You know, and that's it. But if I see that Ruffles bag, immediately I'm like, man, I loved playing, like, Call of Duty, MLB The Show, whatever. And I just got a whole bag of that, a whole thing of dip. And I'm playing games, dipping that in. I mean, if that's, like, the stereotype everybody has of, like, American teenagers, is that they just drink Mountain Dew, eat Doritos, and play video games. I'm like, swap out the Doritos with the Buffalo hot wing chips and the dip, and you nailed it.
You know, and it's not an all the time thing, but man, sometimes, you know, just like playing some video games, eating some junk food, relaxing with it, man, it is.
Yeah.
Didn't appreciate it enough when I was a teenager.
Right. I call it my trailer park dreams. That's what I call it. It's just one of those things, like, you know, like it's just a comforting thing that you can do. That, yes, it is not highfalutin, you know, like super tower apartment in New York City classy. I get it. But in a trailer park, this is pretty fancy. This is good. This is good.
It doesn't have to be good to be good.
Exactly. Doesn't have to be good to be good. It just got to be bad enough. <That's>, that is the way that this goes. And speaking of bad enough, everybody's favorite to hate hospital food, Jell-O. That's right, Jell-O. It is an extremely popular branded simple gelatin dessert from the United States. Gelatin, the main ingredient in Jell-O, is made by extracting collagen from the boiled bones of animals. Yeah. Jell-O was invented in 1897 by Pearl Waite, who experimented with gelatine and invented a new fruit-flavored dessert. His wife, May, loved it and named it Jell-O. The couple sold the patent and the name to their neighbor, Frank Woodward. Oh, Frank, you got it sold right to you. Who excelled in marketing the new product via ads, recipe books, and Jell-O molds. Because of his marketing techniques, Jell-O became one of the most popular brands in American history. Today, it is used in numerous gelatin desserts, puddings, and cream pies, and comes in an extremely wide variety of flavors such as apricot, lemon, grape, mango, peach, pineapple, tropical fusion, and watermelon. Wow. Frank really fell into a friggin' pot of gold, didn't he? Like, you have a neighbor who makes this gelatin dessert, and you're like, you know, I'm kind of a whiz kid at marketing. You want me to take that over?
Yeah, 20 bucks.
Yeah. Oh, man. I tell you. And like I said, this is in every hospital. Every hospital has Jell-O. You can eat Jell-O. Yeah. Like, it's fine.
My daughter was eating some before we started recording.
Yeah, totally. And I will say, Jell-O with, like, Cool Whip.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
pretty
yeah.
dang good. Yeah.
Some Jell-O.
Yeah. And I love, you know, I would fit in the 50s dessert-wise because the fruit cocktail with Jell-O, I'm a sucker for it. I like it. I like it a lot, and I don't know why. I think there's something about how the Jell-O part, I can make it into, like, immediate liquid in my mouth, but then there is, like, pears and peaches and then the cherries. Well, and I'm just like, ooh, those are the hard bits, but I made the other bits liquid.
Well, see, for me, it's like, well, no, this wasn't just dessert. There was fruit in this.
Right. It's healthy.
Yeah. There's fruit in it. That means healthy.
Yeah. It means healthy.
Although, in all fairness, Jell-O, I don't know how bad Jell-O is for you. I'm sure it's not. There's no way it's good for you.
Right. Well, it's one of the moderation, right?
Yeah.
Depends on how much you eat. But yeah, the calorie count is not very high. Sugar sometimes is pretty high. That kind of thing. But I will say, in terms of Jell-O, now we've hit the point where you can actually get vegan Jell-O.
What are they?
Agar. Yeah. It's a thickening agent that is very gelatinous. It actually has, like, the only form of natural, can't remember if it's like natural silicone or collagen, essentially the thing that, you know, holds everything together. But yeah, agar. It is vegetal gelatin.
You know, it's funny. It's, you know, you and I've talked about, like, vegan options before and just, you know, approaching through the lens of, like, okay, let's try it for what it is, not for what it's trying to replace.
Right.
It amazes me still just, like, how many how many different ways that, you know, they are finding to, you know, provide vegan options. And like something like this is a perfect example. Like,
yeah,
I knew that, you know, that I knew that Jell-O hat was made of hooves essentially. But hearing you read it out loud was kind of a,
yeah. Well, the way that they put boiled bones, just like,
yeah, they couldn't have come up with a worse way to explain it. It's accurate, but it's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like marshmallows, they're not vegan. But if you make it with agar-agar, they are. It's
pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like it makes these other dessert-like things a little bit easier, you know? It adds to it. Some substantial thing.
Yeah. Give our vegan friends some options.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of options, if you're you're tired of the hard-shell tacos, look no further than go to Utah and get yourself some Navajo tacos, okay? This is from Food Network, once again, pulling out all the stops in Utah. With influence from southeastern Utah's Navajo Indian tribe, Navajo tacos are a popular dish throughout the state. Instead of a tortilla, the base of the tacos is fry bread rather than a tortilla. Black Sheep at Epic Brewing in Salt Lake City features a Navajo taco piled with juicy beef brisket, black bean chili, Monterey Jack cheese, cream, I'm guessing sour cream, onion, radish, ranchero sauce, cilantro lime rice, and pinto beans.
Oh, everything about that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That is... Okay, so is this meant to be eaten by hand? I mean, and I mean this as a serious question. Is this can you eat it by hand, or is this a knife and fork situation?
So, I believe it is it is supposed to be a hand thing. But I think because of how much is on there and how high it is stacked, I don't think you're going to be frowned upon for using a knife and fork, right? I think it's more of like a toppings thing. Like how many toppings? Because sometimes even like regular beef toppings, like if you do taco beef, right? If there's a lot of moisture to that taco beef, it's going to go right through your fry bread.
Yeah.
So holding it is a disaster waiting to happen. You don't want to do that. But depending on the amount of toppings, things like that. So I think it's both. But I think originally a lot of people were like, well, we can make a fry bread Indian, you know, Navajo taco. And they're like, yeah, look, huh, you can hold it and do that. And then it just kept getting expanded on. They're like, oh, we'll add sour cream. Oh, we'll add black bean chili. Oh, add Monterey Jack cheese. And it just kept stacking, you know.
And it became this thing. I think what you do, though, when you eat this, you put another piece of fry bread below it. Boom, catch everything that falls, and then you get a second taco.
Yeah, double it up. Either that or make fry bread encompass the entire thing, and it is just a ball.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll call it like a Navajo, I don't even want to say Navajo. Yeah, burrito, there you go, Navajo burrito. That is a perfect name. Yeah, and done. You're perfect. Everybody would be like,
I think the thing that gets me about this, too, is the addition of radish.
Yeah.
That's not something I'm used to in a taco, but I think that would add a lot to it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. West Coast-wise, pickled radish or regular radish, you get it with certain types of tacos. A lot of Verde tacos come with the radish. Yeah. Definitely. It adds like a crisp crunch, you know? Something to make all the like meat and sauces, all the smoothness of that. It adds a bite, you know.
Yes, and give it a little bit of freshness too, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Water. Gives it a water splash. A little And then the opposite of that, thick milkshakes. Heck yeah. Iceberg Drive-In has been an iconic Salt Lake City sweet spot since 1960. It's so popular that there are several locations throughout Utah, as well as in California and Arizona. I've never been to one, and so now I'm really sad. Their milkshakes are touted as the thickest around, and each is poured to tower over its cup. Strawberry and peach are local favorites, as they're crafted with real chunks of fruit.
Yeah. I just imagine... And this is probably not true, but in my head, this is where they go. The entire ad campaign revolves around pointing out how wimpy and thin the other milkshakes are.
Yeah.
And how their milkshakes are, like, thick with two C's.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they do the whole Blizzard DQ thing, right? Like, they dump the thin one out, and then theirs, they're like, look at this, and it doesn't, you know?
Now, see, that's the campaign, though. You put a Blizzard upside down, you put an Iceberg Drive-In milkshake upside down. Which one falls out first?
Yeah.
How thick are they?
Yeah. Yeah. We want to know the real answers here, okay? Iceberg, you know? And that's the thing. It's like, and it's got substance. If it's got actual strawberries and chunks of fruit in there, you know, the peach. That's awesome. You know what? And then I hate to distract from Iceberg Drive-In, but I bet they do the same thing, which is why I'm mentioning it. America in general, or anywhere that has a Dairy Queen, if you ever go there, one of the best items they have is a banana milkshake.
Oh, that sounds great. I love banana ice cream combinations. Duke.
Yeah. It literally is just bananas blitzed in with ice cream. And it is so good. It's like, I think everywhere else they make it, like they use a syrup or something to try to make the banana flavor, and it's sickly. It's kind of like, eh.
It's too sweet.
Yeah, way too sweet. Banana milkshake at Dairy Queen. And I'm sure this iceberg, if you said, I want a banana thick daddy iceberg shake, they'd say, oh, okay, yeah. And they would do the same thing. And yeah, something about actually adding bananas to it. I know some people are like, but I'm a straw guy. If it gets stuck in the straw, I'm going to be angry. No, no.
I thought it'd be worth it.
It's totally worth it. Bananas are not as thick as like a cookie or whatever to get caught in the straw. It'll eventually, you know, kind of break apart. And it's so good. And so I can only imagine the peach. You know the little frozen cups of peaches you got at like school lunchrooms, right? In a milkshake.
Oh God! The thing is, I'll tell you. Looking at this, one of the things I love the most is just that very plain paper cup.
Yeah.
That to me, that right there is a sign that it's going to be delicious.
Yeah, because they don't care about the cup, right? Yeah. They're like, just make sure it has our name on it. Make sure it's red, white, and blue. We're done here. That's it. Like, the star of the show is the overflowing milkshake. That is what we want. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. And speaking of just overflowing with things, whether it's debt or ice cream, collegiate ice cream, you can see here it says Aggie if you're watching on YouTube. In Utah, ice cream is taken very seriously. So seriously, in fact, that there's a collegiate ice cream rival between the on-site creameries of Utah State University and Brigham Young University. It's Utah State University's Aggie ice cream that takes the cake or ice cream. Aggie Blue Mint. So it's blue mint, not green mint. The brand's best-selling flavor was developed by food science students and features mint ice cream with crushed Oreos and white chocolate chunks. Dang. That sounds great. That sounds so good.
So first of all, mint chocolate chip is my favorite ice cream flavor. It is absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, I know that there is no real discernible difference between white mint chocolate chip and green mint chocolate chip.
Right.
But I would die on the hill that green mint chocolate chip is better. It just is.
Period.
It just is. Yeah. So I don't know how I feel about blue. I will also say, though, too, so the idea that, okay, food science students created this by just adding crushed Oreos and white chocolate chunks makes me feel good because I'm not a fat sack of crap who just puts random food together. I'm a food scientist.
Right.
I am hypothesizing and testing. So the next time,
it makes you think it's cold.
Yeah. See, there you go. The next time my wife asks me why I'm putting leftover Chinese food in a tortilla, it's like I'm not just making a burrito because I'm nuts. Okay, I am a food scientist doing food experiments.
Exactly.
I have a food hypothesis.
This is called cultural fusion. You uneducated swine! Please let me do my work in peace.
I probably won't call my wife uneducated swine.
But if it was a random passerby, that is what you say right there. Yeah, you know, they're like, why are you putting Chinese food in a tortilla? And you're like, listen, you uneducated swine. These are cultural fusion at its best.
this is a food experiment.
Yeah. This is a food experiment. Yeah. Please wear goggles while you're in the lab.
I kind of want to get like a white lab coat and some goggles for the next time I've got some random, you know, I'm adding hot sauce to macaroni and cheese and cut up hot dogs, and it's, you know, again, just a food experiment. I'm a food scientist.
Well, and it's like roll for sandwich, right?
Oh yeah,
like that's an experimentation type of thing that just it has taken off. You recently interviewed him on your show.
I did.
Plug away. Yeah, tell us that experience. It was a great episode. I loved it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I know we're not quite at the plug part yet, but yeah. Right. So on my podcast, Our Last Meal, I talk about grief, loss, and food, and just. That idea of everybody has somebody that has meant something to them that they've lost, and there's always a connection around food. You've shared a meal with somebody that means a lot to you. Jake from Roll for Sandwich or Adventures in Ardia on TikTok has this really cool series where he uses a Dungeons & Dragons approach of rolling dice to build a sandwich. He has all these different options. And it has taken off on TikTok. He has over 1.5 million subscribers who watch him build these just random sandwiches. Yeah. And there's something so cool about it because he's, as a narrator, he's amazing. He does such a good job of kind of like, he tries to stay positive. Maybe this will work out.
Yeah. Could be good.
But just like the concept is just, it's just so cool, so unique. But talking with Jake, he was such a nice, genuinely kind person. And getting to hear him talk about his grandmother who was close with growing up and the house that she lived in when he was growing up and just how much that place meant to him. It was such an interesting episode and just it was wonderful. It was just such a delight to talk with him. So if you're not familiar with Roll for Sandwich, look it up.
Yeah.
Such a cool series. It's just
so cool series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, what I found interesting about, Jake talking about that stuff was he talked about like a longingness for a place. And that I have felt that more than ever since coming to the West Coast. Every now and again, the sun will be at the right angle, a breeze will roll by, whatever. And I'll be like on the Oregon coast or I'll be in like, near a vineyard or something near Woodburn or somewhere else in Oregon. And there's like a part of me that's like, I could swear I'm in Missouri.
Yeah.
Like this feels so strange. And you start looking around cause you're like, I want to find a place that looks and feels exactly like I've had before. And yeah, totally. My grandma and grandpa's farm. I miss that place out and towards West Plains, Caulfield, Missouri. Those kinds of areas, there's just these places that you wish you could go back to and not only go back to, but like in that time.
Yeah. It feels like as we get older, it's just easier to long for those things.
Yeah.
I think Jake, he did just such a good job of, communicating that and articulating just how you can miss a place and how you can even grieve a person before you've lost a person.
Yeah.
It was a great episode. Of course, I'll do the shameless thing and plug, go check that episode out on my feed. But if you haven't had a chance to just watch Jake's stuff, please do. It's a lot of fun and it's a great approach to making a sandwich.
Totally. Yeah. Fun. It uses up other ingredients.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's great. And it really, the way that he told it, it's like it hits all five of your senses. And then on top of that, your memory and everything, because it's like the person there, the food there, the smells, the place, the feeling of like the countertops and everything. Like, yeah, it's one of those things that it was very it touched a little part of me inside the little heart cage here. It was like, Oh, Jake, you hit it. Man, you hit it.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah. So check it out. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, what have you, Our Last Meal, or go to ourlastmeal.com. You can tell your story. Go to the contact and hit up Andrew here and talk about how food and grief and loss have connected with you. And all I got to say, bringing Jake into this, Jake would be probably like the professor of the lab room of experimentation with foods, right?
Yeah, like, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's the one who's got, you know, the little black robe and then, like, 15 sashes over the, you know, he's like, yes, I did roll for sandwich. And everybody's like, oh, oh, wow. Oh. You know, like, dang, he knows what he's doing. And then somebody's like, well, I was going to make my mint ice cream blue. And he's like, it's a good idea. And everybody's like, damn. Like, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, just, oh, man. Yeah. And so, yeah, totally. I could see that being the case there. But, yeah, another popular thing, which I have not had the pleasure of enjoying, whether in Utah or anywhere else in the world, fireside cooking, and specifically fireside cooking with cheeses.
I'm in.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Winter feels cozy and enjoyable when fireside dining at Empire Canyon Lodge is part of the equation. Nestled slopeside at Deer Valley Resort, the lodge conjures the Alps. The menu is designed to be prepared in the stone fireplaces. Though most of it is hearty and appealing, the Swiss raclette station with cheese melting directly onto plates via customized stand is a top contender. Nearly 600 wheels are ordered each season, making it the top priority for both locals and visitors. The fire-roasted leg of lamb, cured meats, and dessert fondue stations are worth the splurge.
I feel like we've spoken before about lamb. I love lamb. It is such an underappreciated meat.
Definitely. Yeah.
I also love melted Swiss cheese, or just melted cheese, I guess would be fair to say.
Yeah.
Just but conceptually, this looks so cool, you know.
Yeah. Just melting right onto a plate.
Yeah.
Start fire.
Again, I've got no funny comment to make. I want to go to Utah, and I never thought I'd say those words in that order, but I want to go to Utah.
Yeah. That wheel of fat, salt, and mold is making me long for a sweater and a piping hot plate of lamb and cheese. Like,
God. Man. And there's just something about food being cooked with fire. Like, actual fire.
Yeah, yeah. Over wood, right? Like, you know, that whole thing. Yeah, there's something about it. It makes my inner caveman, the inner Ooga Booga, kind of do that, where it's just like, and you have to, you know, move stuff, move the embers around, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Oh, man. Just sounds too good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like Bear Lake raspberries. That's right. More mini Utahns. See, Utahns. That's what it is. Utahns. summers are synonymous with fleeing to Bear Lake for a fun in the sun, and more importantly, Bear Lake raspberry shakes. So another shake, another milkshake.
Ooh.
This is hitting on, once again, the bland. Like,
I mean,
it's good. It's delicious, but nothing too crazy.
It's salt of the earth.
Yeah, salt of the earth. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, salt of the
Lake City. Yeah.
Yeah. But the plump, juicy berries only grown in Bear Lake Valley make for one of the sweetest cool down treats ever invented. After a long day of water recreation, LeBeau's Drive-In in Garden City is a worthwhile stop. Fresh raspberries are blended into soft serve ice cream and piled over the rim for the added indulgence.
That sounds so good. A raspberry milkshake sounds amazing.
Sounds really good. Especially when they're more sweet than tart, you know?
I don't know. With the ice, if the ice cream is kind of sweet already, I think a little bit of tartness would be great. Like, I feel like raspberries are such an underappreciated fruit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think the seeds detract people, but, like, the flavor should be your number one, right? Raspberries are amazing. And blue raspberry, although childish, delicious. Every time. period. It's one of those things where now I'm getting messages from the other room. Dun, 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 dun. But I mean, the blue raspberry type of thing, I don't know why, but I get suckered into that pretty much every time. I don't know what it is, but it's like whether it's a freeze, right? Like the polar bear on the snowboard, or that's icy. Sorry, icy. Yeah, that or like 7-Eleven, whatever. If I see blue raspberry, I'm like Jolly Rancher blue raspberry. Gotta have blue raspberry. Like, oh man, I can't have enough. But yeah, but no, the next one, Cremignelli fine meats. That's right. As you can tell by the thinly sliced meats here, very thin. They almost look see-through. That's how crazy thin they are. Chances are you've probably seen or tasted Cremignelli's meats before, regardless of where you live. Born into a family that has been curing meats in Italy since the 1600s, Cristiano Cremignelli brought his meat-making skills stateside to Salt Lake City in 2006 and has been wowing taste buds ever since. The farm at Park City Mountain Resort, which specializes in seasonal, local fare, showcases the award-winning salami on a charcuterie board with mustard, pepper relish, house pickles, and grilled bread.
I don't know if it's because we're the Lunchables generation, but as I've gotten older, I love charcuterie. I just salty meats. Cheeses and just the and the pepper jelly too. Everything you just said sounds incredible.
Very build your own, right?
Yeah,
like
I love that
think that's the like full enjoyment. You get to do it with your hands, and it's build your own, and yet it looks fancy.
How do they do this? And everything's like always trying to get that one perfect bite at a time.
Mm-hmm. Every time, yeah. And I love it when somebody adds like an apple butter, you know, a fruit jam of some kind. Ugh, man, oh man. And like I said, brie cheese. I am a woman of the night for brie cheese. I don't know what it is, but I love brie cheese. I can't get enough of brie cheese.
Same.
Yeah.
And I don't care how funky it smells. I love brie. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Actually, it's so good.
Yeah. It's not brie. I did get some cheese at the store. We went grocery shopping earlier. I tried I forget the brand name, but they make a Merlot cheese and espresso cheese. And then I got one today. It was a Kentucky bourbon. I haven't tried it yet, but a bourbon infused cheese I am excited for. I'll have to update you.
Yes, you will. That sounds amazing. Oh my gosh. But yeah, the next one here, along that same vein of cheeses, artisanal cheese. Very popular in Utah because cold weather, white people, we make cheese. That is kind of how this works. But no, it's seemingly countless dairy farms. Yeah, anywhere where there's a ton of dairy farms, in the U.S. especially, cheese is coming out of the woodwork. Whether it's goats, milk, you know, dairy milk, whatever it may be, it's coming. Urber Valley Artisan... cheese in Midway is particularly exceptional. Run by a fourth generation farmer and cheesemaker, the farm has an on-site store with 5 types of cheeses and more than 40 flavor profiles at any given time. Cheese tastings offered every second Friday of the month are a chance for customers to tour the farm, learn about the cheesemaking process, and sample up to 30 different cheeses, including a honey lavender cheddar and pepper infused jack cheese.
I love that we're in a day and age where we are just trying to pump as much different flavors into cheese as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Lavender honey, like, I can see how some folks may think that's way too floral, but the thing is, the fat and the salt, depending on how high of an amount in that cheese, it's going to pair wonderfully. It's going to be amazing.
I can see that, and it's one of those, I would just have to try it.
Yeah,
totally. I couldn't not try that.
Yeah. A good example... Salt and Straw out here in Oregon, they have a blue cheese pear ice cream.
Huh.
You wouldn't think it would work well. One, why is there not more pear ice cream, for one?
Agreed. Pear it's a nice subtle
amazing,
flavor.
Yeah, pear is an amazing flavor. But then on top of that, it's like blue cheese. If I take anybody from out of town, family, whatever it may be, to Salt and Straw, I always get a scoop of the blue cheese and pear ice cream because I'm like, no, you have to try this. This is going to blow your mind because you may not love it, but you have to agree that it's like, you know, that's delicious.
It works better than it should.
Yeah, it works way better than it should. And there's something about it that is just so good. and it's creamy still. Don't know how they do that. How they get a moldy cheese and pear to taste like a nice summer treat. I don't know how they do that. But it's amazing. So cheese, overrated and underrated. Like a lot, you know? Both. That's the way I gotta go.
I agree with you.
Yeah. But another one that is just used in absolutely everything in the United States, corn or corn. Yeah, the huge song. I don't know what's going on with that. But Utah corn is a popular thing in Utah. There are a few more pleasing American pastimes than noshing on locally grown summer corn. God, they nailed that on the head. I love doing that. And Utah grows some of the best. Get a taste of the real deal at Waldorf Astoria Park City's Powder Restaurant, where executive chef Riker Brown uses the vegetable during the season, typically July through October, and several creative main dishes and sides. Utah corn chowder is bolstered with bacon, leeks, potato, and garlic, and is a crowd favorite. Well, no duh.
Yeah. Everything about that sounds good. That just...
yeah.
Yeah. You could just throw random amounts in a pot, and that's going to be tasty. There's no way you can screw that up.
Totally. I mean, even looking at the picture of this, where it's got your bacon coming out, the corn on there, the roasted potatoes inside of it with a little sprig of what looks like maybe Italian parsley. It's not rosemary, I know that, but it's like... Is this in a shallow bowl? This should be in a deep dish bowl that I might drown in. Like, that's what I'm needing out of this. I need more. I need a whole bunch of this. Then the next one here, we're back to lamb, baby. Morgan Valley lamb. Look at that raw lamb. The open pastures of Utah are ideal for including heritage lambs. Now, at Salt Lake City's Table X, from chefs Mike Blosher, Nick Foz, and chef David Barboza, the aim of the daily changing menu is to highlight seasonal and local ingredients. One dish almost always on the menu is Morgan Valley lamb tartare. Through the accompanying toppings change with market availability, the tender, locally raised lamb is an undeniable star.
I've never had a tartare.
Never had a tartare. Oh man, yeah.
I would try it. I'm just gonna be honest. It looks tasty, but also just you can tell that there's craft put into it. I would have to try that.
Yeah, and there's something about raw meat. The I don't want to say the chewiness, but the texture of it as you're biting through. That I don't know what it is, but the acidity, the saltiness, everything paired together. It sings.
Out of this world.
Yeah, just sings. It is so good. And so I've never had a lamb tartare. That is for sure. And, yeah, I want the wool sweater. I want the wool sweater with the carrots on top. Give me more. I need that. Yeah. And then afterwards, I'll have the roasted lamb with the cheese from the other part. Yeah. Yeah. I could go on a lamb buffet. I could just do that all day. Yeah.
Ugh. A little lamb food tour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I call it like the black sheep tour. I don't know what you would do, you know. Oh, man. Gotta love some lamb. Anyways.
Mary had a little lamb and then a little cheese on the side.
Yeah, and then a little cheese on the side. Yeah. Then stone fruit. So any type of stone fruit. Cherries are Utah's state fruit, but all stone fruit seems to grow well here, including peaches that dominate farmers' markets later each summer. Chef Briar Handley of HSL in Salt Lake City showcases the bounty with a stunning sweet and savory stone fruit salad, combining the fruit with guanciale, avocado, and lettuce, finished with candied hazelnuts and sea salt. I typically wait to put them on the menu until I see the old blue and white Ford Ranger truck owned by Leon Wilson of Wilson's Peaches pull up. Then I know it's time, he says.
So if Leon ever gets a new truck, he's going to screw up the entire menu.
Totally. Yeah. He's going to ruin that restaurant just by buying a new truck. He's like, oh, I saw a Dodge Ram the other day. And they're like, no. Please.
Well, I didn't know you were ready. I got a new truck. I mean, you kept buying, and I was able to get out and move on from the old blue and white Ranger.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Devin, you've got me sold on Utah, I think. I think I want to go check it out.
Yeah. The thing that I keep thinking about in terms of Utah is, like, if you've already been to Denver and you've already been to Colorado and you've been watching the Elks and the Rocky Mountains and that stuff, go to Utah afterwards. And don't drive to Utah, because most of the time you have to drive through Wyoming if you're coming from the east. And Wyoming, as a friend once put it, is windier than a bag of farts. It is so windy in Wyoming. It is insane. It tips semis over constantly. Yeah. It is crazy. You look out across the landscape of Wyoming and you think you see a ton of little like stones or pebbles. And it's like, what the heck is that? It's sheep.
Oh, wow.
It's sheep.
I was going to say, your friend, I don't know when their book of poetry comes out, but if you'll just let me know, right. I want to make sure I pre-order.
Yeah, I mean, his process, you know, it's a long process. I just remember I was driving, it's a Chevy Colorado, I was driving it, and I mean, the wind was literally, like, I could hear the tires kind of, like, screeching underneath because they were moving, like, side to side on the pavement. So it was like, God. I'd be driving and I'd be like, and it was because of the wind. I think the wind was at, like, 70-some-odd miles an hour, and, like, yeah, it was crazy. Wyoming, the state that's got Yellowstone and all these things, but it's windier than a bag of farts. That's the, you know, the thing that you take with it.
that's my new favorite saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's windier than a bag of farts. Because it implies, one, you don't like the scenario, and two, the scenario is made worse because it has to stink, right? Like, automatically, it's got to stink more. So it's, yeah. It's a tough time in the bag of farts realm, you know.
Yeah.
But no, Utah, wonderful state, very pretty, gorgeous. Whether you're in the desert parts, the forest parts, the lake parts, the city, Park City, Utah parts, it's not good in their bathrooms there. I don't know why, but it is amazing everywhere else in Utah. Great state, great food, a lot of handmade artisanal food, it seems. So that's really good.
Yeah, I'd have a ton of respect for that. So,
yeah,
I appreciate you walking me through Utah.
Yeah, I appreciate you tagging along with me. Once again, everybody, go to ourlastmeal.com or check Our Last Meal out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. Or if you want to be on Our Last Meal and talk about a special person, place, a time period, whatever it may be, about loss, grief, and food, hit up Andrew. He's going to have a wonderful conversation with you about it, and we will all get to not only kind of cope with you, but get to enjoy it. It'll be great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, like I said, I've said this many a time, it is humanity distilled into the little ear pods you might listen to or the speakers that you listen to these podcasts out of. It's really, really great. Also, anybody paying attention to Culinary Convo stuff, join the newsletter. You got to get the newsletter. That way you can get the recipes from the show that we're doing here through Pinterest. I will post any and all recipes that I can find for all the food items that we have here. And then checking out our, you know, Great British Baking Show recap, 3-2-1 Bake Off. We've had that going on. So everybody check it out at culinaryconvo.com or wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Check out all the socials. So TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. You can check out, you know, Our Last Meal on Twitter and all the socials. It'll be Our Last Meal Pod on all the socials. It's amazing time. I'm so glad Andrew got to join us. And next time, we're going to the state of Georgia. That's right. The state of Georgia. So Georgia on our minds. We will be hanging out there. Hopefully not hanging out with the Braves. They're not in the playoffs anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, they lost. Ouch. Ouch. But so did my Cardinals. My Cardinals lost. So I, you know, either
way. At least you have a baseball team to lose.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. You know, I'm just grateful that I get to raise my blood pressure every other night watching my favorite team destroy my hopes and dreams. Not really. But anyways, we will see everybody next time in Georgia. Andrew, thank you again for joining me here. And everybody check out Our Last Meal and sign up for our newsletter on culinaryconvo.com. We'll see everybody next time. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye. We'll see everybody next time on an episode of United Foods of America.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.